From the heartland of America, the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast to Coast AM. What an evening we have in store for you tonight. Get ready for a whole bunch of stuff. Well, a strange, salty lake in California has yielded an unequally strange bacterium that thrives on arsenic and redefines life as we know it. Now, the bacteria do not merely eat arsenic, they incorporate the toxic element directly into our DNA. The finding shows just how little scientists know about the variety of life forms on Earth and may greatly expand where they should be looking for life on other planets and moons, this according to a NASA-funded team. They had a major news conference today, and our investigative reporter, Linda Moulton Howe, was listening in, and here she is with her report. Linda, what a story, huh?
It is, George, and I'm curious if you ever saw Star Trek's famous The Devil in the Dark episode from...
I did.
Right. Yep. You know, that very first season, it was all the way back in March of 1967. And I think most of us who love Star Trek remember when Kirk and Spock encountered this slow-moving blob underground on another planet beyond Earth. And Spock guessed that it was a silicon-based life form instead of carbon-based as we know Earth life. Well, today, NASA's press conference in Washington, D.C. described something like that. Only this discovery is on Earth in Northern California's Mono Lake that you were just talking about. It's northeast of Yosemite Park. The traditional theory has been that the main ingredients of all carbon-based life are carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, sulfur, and phosphorus. One substance on Earth that poisons and kills multicellular life forms is arsenic. It's a metalloid found with sulfur and metals. Mono Lake in California has lots of toxic arsenic and very little phosphorus. So that toxic lake water should kill Earth microorganisms, not make them thrive. But biochemist and NASA Astrobiology Institute research fellow Felisa Simon, Wolf Simon, Ph.D., has discovered a bacteria in Mono Lake called GFAJ-1. It grows and reproduces on the arsenic-rich diet of that lake. The microbes even have arsenic encoded in their DNA genome where phosphorus would normally be encoded. That means the GFAJ-1 organism is radically different than other known Earth life. Dr. Wolf Simon's colleague is Pamela Conrad, Ph.D., astrobiologist at NASA Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, and deputy investigator on the upcoming Mars Science Lab scheduled for a late 2011 launch to Mars. They're going to look for habitable places there and evidence of past life. This will be the first astrobiology mission since Viking in 1976. Dr. Conrad summed up the importance of finding the arsenic-eating bacteria in Mono Lake.
This is a phenomenal finding. We are talking about taking the fundamental building blocks of life and replacing one of them with another compound. Some of us remember seeing these original Star Trek episodes. If you remember the Dark Evil and the Horta, this is, in our mind, the equivalent of finding Horta, which is a silicon-based life, substituting carbon, which is what we think all life forms are made of, with silica. Now we're talking about an organism that we think appears to be using another fundamental component of life. It's replacing phosphorus with arsenic. This is a huge deal. It's going to require at least paragraphs in a textbook to be rewritten and will fundamentally change how we define life and therefore how we will look for it. Maybe we'll be able to find ET now because we've got more information about what we might be looking for.
And that is why this press conference today got so much attention from NASA. The implications are, George, that in this press conference, this development, we have now officially expanded our definition of life from Earth out into the cosmos. And now It means that scientists are going to be looking at all kinds of different possible substitutions in molecular arrangements that we would call life.
You know what's funny about all this, Linda? We all know there's life out there. Their science is just starting to catch up with us, aren't they?
Yes. Yes. It does make me sort of smile at the level of interviewing so many people who have had what they say are face-to-face with non-humans.
I love it. Great. Nice job, Linda.
Thank you.
Linda Moulton Howe, earthfiles.com is her website. And in a moment, by the way, space historian Robert Zimmerman joins us for the hour as we talk about this truly remarkable story. Next hour, our science advisor and head of the enterprisemission.com, Richard C. Hoagland, reacts to this story as well. In other news, this year is almost certain to rank among the three hottest years on record. And 2001 to 2010, they say, undoubtedly, is the warmest 10-year period since the beginning of records that were kept in 1850. This according to the United Nations Weather Agency. The Department of Defense is slamming the door on questions about that mysterious contrail that we've been reporting on. Remember that back in November 8th, right around there, a television crew from Los Angeles saw what might have been a missile being launched there off the coast of L.A. Nobody really knew what was going on. Well, apparently there was a warning from the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency that there could be missiles fired in that area at the time. They came out with a story sometime in October. The official government position has been that the contrail, which appears to have been made by a single source, was from a jet passing by. And the refusal to provide answers to specific questions suggests a cover-up of potential secret missile testing in the area, contrary to official jet contrail explanation. Well, the federal financial crisis stretched even further across the economy than many had realized. As new disclosures show, the Federal Reserve rushed trillions of dollars into emergency aid, not just to Wall Street, but also to motorcycle makers, telecom firms, and foreign-owned banks in 2008 and 2009. The Fed's efforts to prop up the financial sector reached across a broad spectrum of the economy, benefiting stalwarts of the American industry, including General Electric and Caterpillar, and household name companies such as Verizon, Harley-Davidson, and Toyota. The central bank's aid programs also supported U.S. subsidiaries of banks based in East Asia, Europe, and Canada, while rescuing money market funds held by millions of Americans. G. Edward Griffin has been an advocate of fixing up the Federal Reserve. As a matter of fact, his book, Creature from Jekyll Island, A Second Look at the Federal Reserve, one of those bestsellers. He's on the line with us right now. Well, you suspected, Edward, that they were spending trillions of dollars. When we talked back in January, I think you knew this.
Well, I think I did, too, and I think a lot of us did. I think a lot of your listeners knew that, too, but we just didn't have the facts. How did we know it? Because we know that's what these people in Washington do. That is their solution to all of these problems, is to create money out of nothing, push it into the economy through the banks, of course. That's the funnel where it always goes in. And, you know, I was looking at that news earlier today, and the thing that struck me, maybe many people didn't notice it, but the thing that struck me was that they keep saying, well, don't worry about it, folks. It was all paid back. It didn't cost anything. Like, okay, well, I guess they were pretty smart to do that. That's the implication. Nobody questions whether that is a factual statement or not. You know, we don't question. For example, in your news analysis a moment ago, this United Nations group says that this was the warmest year in so many years. And everybody says, oh, was it? They don't question it. They don't realize that these people, you know, invent facts like that and just push them out. All of those sources need to be challenged, I think. It's time for us to take a little bit of skepticism and take it seriously. But anyway, we're talking about, not about the weather now, but we're talking about the banking system. And maybe people forgot that back in, I guess it was the fall of 2008, when the brokerage house, Merrill Lynch, ran out of money and it was on the verge of closing its doors. And the Bank of America agreed to buy that firm for, I think it was $50 billion.
That's right.
And it was a strange offer, I thought, because the bank itself was in trouble and recently received $25 billion in bailout. You know, so how can a company like the Bank of America, that's out of money itself and receiving bailout, suddenly come up with an offer of $50 billion to buy another bailing institution?
The feds gave them the money to do it.
Of course, of course. And that's the point I'm leading up to, because when the Bank of America finally discovered the full books were disclosed to them, how much Merrill Lynch was in the hole, they wanted to back out of the deal. And according to the testimony of Ken Lewis, who was the Bank of America's CEO at that time, he was told by Secretary of Treasury Hank Paulson that he must continue to purchase Merrill Lynch. If he didn't do it, Paulson threatened that he would remove all of the board of directors from the Bank of America if he didn't go ahead as agreed. Well, so then Ken Lewis said, well, would you guarantee that if we do this, that we will not suffer a loss? And according to his testimony, Ben Bernanke said, of course we will guarantee it. That's the whole deal, you understand. And so Ken Lewis said, well, would you put that in writing? And then this is the clincher, because Paulson's statement was, of course not. And he said a written statement would be a disclosable event. And now I'm quoting, it would be a disclosable event, and we do not want a disclosable event.
How did this information get public now, this trillions of dollars pumped into these other companies?
Well, as I understand it, George, it's because of some legislation that was sponsored by Senator Bernie, what's his fellow, from Vermont. Anyway, they were required to do it, and they didn't want to do it. I think they probably cleaned it up a lot to release
just, Bernie Sanders.
Yeah,
right?
They sanitized it a lot. But they certainly didn't want to do that at all, and that's the reason they fought the audit the Fed bill, is because that's the kind of thing that would have been made available.
Well, Ron Paul must be jumping for joy on this one. Right?
Well, I suppose, yes. And, you know, Ron Paul and many of us were saying, the secret here that they're really trying to hide is how much of American money was sent overseas. And the other secret, I think, is that even those, they're all saying, well, it was all repaid. It wasn't. It was repaid with other money that was loaned out and provided by the
Fed. Exactly.
To repay the first loan with a new loan.
Ed, we got to get you back for a more in-depth show. Ed Griffin, his book, Creature from Jekyll Island. Johnson & Johnson is adding 12 million bottles of Mylanta, the stomach discomfort treatment, to its ongoing list of recalled products. That's right. Due to the presence of alcohol that's not listed on the label. Johnson & Johnson said that it's recalling 12.3 million bottles of Mylanta and more than 84,000 bottles of what is called Alternagel, which is used for heartburn relief. The company said it's recalling the products made in a joint venture with Merck, because the presence of alcohol from flavoring agents was not noted on the packaging. Certain flavoring agents contribute small, less than 1% amounts of alcohol. Up next, space historian Robert Zimmerman joins us as we talk about this incredible discovery that bacteria can live in something that we never thought it could. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Robert Zimmerman, award-winning space historian, writing articles and books on issues of science, history, technology, and culture. He's with us this hour on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Robert, welcome.
George, as always, it's a pleasure to be here.
You know, I was a little disappointed with the NASA announcement today. Let me tell you why. I was expecting, with all this hype, that they found something, really found something out in outer space. Instead, it's something that they found in a lake here in this country. And I don't know. To me, it was a letdown. How about you?
Well, you know, I wrote a long post on BehindTheBlack.com today about this. I had actually not posted anything about this on the webpage all week. When NASA made the announcement, I think it was Monday, that they were going to have this press conference, and they announced what it would be about in extremely vague terms. Initially, it was so vague, I couldn't find out what exactly this was about. And so I said, well, they have no idea. I ain't going to speculate. I'll wait until the press conference. As the week passed, the speculation went out out of this world. People went nuts. You had bloggers, you had journalists speculating maybe they've discovered life on Mars, maybe we discovered it around Saturn with Cassini, maybe it's on Europa or around Jupiter. The speculation was really getting out of hand, and it was all just speculation. And
sure.
I found it a little bit distressing that journalists would and bloggers were doing this kind of thing. I still wouldn't post about it. I had people emailing me and asking me what is this about, and I said, well, I have no idea, and I'm not going to speculate yet. Well, finally yesterday the uproar had gotten so much, the rumors were so high, that Science, the magazine in which the paper was going to be published, sent out a notice to journalists giving a little more information about what paper the conference was specifically about. And that's when I saw, oh, it was going to be about this incredible ability of a specific microbe to replace phosphorus with arsenic.
Arsenic, yeah.
Which is incredible and very significant. Everything Linda said was absolutely correct.
Right.
However, I still wasn't going to post about it because Science had an embargo. Now, that embargo eventually got broken because a lot of people were writing about this. The whole thing that's disturbing to me is, and this relates to the discussion you just had about accepting what people say, so-called authorities say, without
right.
question, such as with climate change. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of questions about whether this was the hottest year, third hottest year in history. And I wouldn't take what the UN, especially any specialists there say, at face value. In fact, I would question it significantly if it's a UN science body. So the same thing applies here. You have journalists speculating like crazy, and of course, it turns out all those speculations were wrong. They were all wrong. And whenever journalists speculate like this, they almost invariably are wrong and look foolish when they're over. And the worst part of it is that they develop mistrust with the public. Two things happen. Either they have informed people badly and people don't realize it, or people realize they've been informed badly and they become a little bit angry and irritated and distrustful now of the press, which means you can't trust anything you're hearing. And that's a lot of the reactions of the public. Which is why I didn't post about this until I knew exactly what it was about.
Well,
because
good.
It seemed to me that that would be feeding on distrust for the journalist community. And that's the journalist aspect of this. And it's really shameful, and it's why you felt let that down. When I finally saw what the paper was about, I said, oh, well, that's not as big a deal as they gave us the impression. Though it's a big deal, it isn't actually finding life on another world. And that's people started to think that. Now, I have wondered if this was not a very clever ploy by NASA public relations people to release this so vaguely that you get the speculation going. I'm not so sure this story would have gotten as much coverage as it did, George, if they hadn't.
There's no way. No
way.
We had Whitley Strieber, author, was on last night, and,
yeah.
and he said, George, I think it's about arsenic in some kind of bacteria, but I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure that it could be that. And even then, to me, I'm saying, guys, that's not what I want to hear.
Yeah.
You know, I want them to say, you know, as Hoagland will join us next hour, Bob, I'm going to have him on. You know, I want them to say, we found structures on Mars. We found little people. We found something. Not, you know, we found a bacterium in a lake in California that lives on arsenic. I mean,
Yes, and, you know, like I say, there's two parts to this story, and the part one is that the discovery itself is quite significant.
Yes,
it does
yes.
tell us that it proves what we already suspected, that life can develop in extremely strange, in alien ways. It's alien. So that's an important part of this story. But the other part of the story is the desire of both journalists and a lot of public bloggers, and which are not necessarily journalists, to speculate. And I had one radio guy who wanted to interview me on this beg me to speculate. And I kept saying to him, I don't know. This is why they even have released it. I don't know what it's about. I'm not going to speculate. And the speculation is a mistake. You see it on major press organizations, the cable networks. They don't report news very well, George, because they spend a lot of time opinionating and speculating rather than providing
so true.
The facts.
Robert, we're going to keep you for phone calls.
Sure.
Come right back. Okay, stick around. Let's go. Robert Zimmerman with us and your calls next. Well, next hour, Richard C. Hoagland joins us as we talk about this story about the discovery of bacteria that lives in arsenic. When we come back, we'll take your phone calls with space historian Robert Zimmerman right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. We've got Bob Zimmerman here. Bob, arsenic is poisonous to nearly all forms of life on Earth. Even small amounts of poison become embedded within living tissue, causes liver failure, ultimately death in nearly everything but these bacteria. Now, these bacteria that they discovered in this lake in California, these are have always been earthbound bacteria, right? They didn't come from some other planetary system, right?
Yes, they are the equivalent of extremophiles. They live in a very difficult environment that most life can't manage in. The fact, one of the reasons arsenic is so poisonous to so much life is that it has certain chemical similarities to phosphorus. A life that depends on phosphorus in its DNA and in its chemical structure and also to eat or live on, arsenic in certain situations can actually slip in and mimic phosphorus. So the life of the animal or plant life or whatever microbe grabs the arsenic thinking it's phosphorus, and because it's not the same, it causes significant problems and eventually can, and often quickly can, kill the body or the life, the animal or creature. In this case, the microbes somehow incorporated the similarities were enough that this microbe was able to make it work. And that's very interesting. It means that there are life processes that will allow arsenic to function within the life processes, and that's what makes this so significant. This changes how biologists look at how DNA functions and how life functions, and they will have to reassess. It doesn't rewrite the textbooks, as they said at the press conference. It rewrites several paragraphs in the textbooks, but that's actually a very big deal for a single paper to do that.
To the phones we go, east of the Rockies. Brian is in Wichita, Kansas, and you're on Coast to Coast. Hey, Brian, go ahead.
How you doing?
Hey, Brian.
I had two questions for you. The first one, basically, these are both about an alien life, essentially. And it's always bothered me somewhat that people talk about it like they know something. So here's my two questions. The first one is, can you tell me anywhere in the universe which you have conclusively proved that there is life other than on Earth?
Well, I can tell you conclusively, they have not found life anywhere else. Absolutely have not. As far as I can tell, and I will say, and I want to say this strongly, if there is a NASA scientist or any scientist out there who has done such a thing, it absolutely makes no sense for them to keep it a secret. This press conference today demonstrates the benefits that will accrue in terms of career to any scientist who discovers such a thing. And since nobody's come forward at this point, and I haven't been able to find anything, I can say I'm very confident they have yet to find life anywhere else. They found evidence that life might have been places, or possible it could have been places, but they haven't yet found it, Brian.
Okay, so my second question is, can you tell me any place on Earth where they have not found life?
Oh, that's a good question. Well,
I can tell you some places.
No, I can't tell you that because that's like proving a negative. There are a lot of places where we've looked and we don't. Like if you're able to do a real analysis inside a volcano, the molten rock, you're not finding life there. But that doesn't mean it's not there, but it's just not found. The thing that's significant about your question, it's a really good question, is that it's life on Earth is incredibly pervasive. Anywhere you look, you're almost always going to find life. And life, not just humans, changes the environment significantly. It shapes it. You look, trees, plant life reshapes the environment significantly. And so that's the way the Earth is. I always think of that when I look at the pictures on Mars. I posted about a week ago something called Sightseeing on Mars, images of that Opportunity is taking as it strolls very slowly the 11 miles across the plains of Mars to get to Endeavour Crater. And those images are spectacular. I love looking at them because it's like sightseeing. But they also show you how different Mars is from Earth, because if there is life there, it's extremely hidden. The plains show no evidence of life. And if anyone, if you're familiar with what deserts are like, deserts are not like that. They have lots of life. It's very rare you'll be on a desert where you'll see no life at all. In fact, I've never come across it. I've spent a lot of time in the American Southwest. So that's a your two questions are very good, Brian, because they illustrate the significant difference between the way the Earth is and the way every other alien body looks so far that we've been able to get a good look at. There's a big difference, and life's the difference.
Would you say that Earth is an unusual planet or a common planet on its proximity to its star?
Well, you're just asking me now to speculate, George. We talked about that earlier.
I don't know.
One of the big mystery questions about exoplanet research. We do not know yet if the Earth is unusual or not. The likelihood is that it's not unusual, but the evidence isn't there yet. I'm trying to be careful. I don't like to speculate when we don't have the facts yet. There were two stories that happened the last 2 days that have not gotten a lot of play, but they are just as important in terms of this search for life in the universe. One of them is that scientists think they have found evidence in elliptical galaxies that the number of red dwarf stars in the universe is about three times the number previously predicted. This indicates that the possibilities of a lot more potential homes for Earth exists. That's one story. The other is they have detected in a super Earth, a planet that's about 6.5 times heavier than the Earth, which is one of the smallest exoplanets so far discovered, they have discovered that there's a great deal of water in its atmosphere that either is in the form of steam or clouds or haze. Now, this is a planet that's going to be rocky. And it's wet, and wow, there could be life there. So your question is a good one, and we don't know yet, but it's one of the holy grail questions of exoplanet research, to find that Earth and to find out the percentage of Earths that exist. Earth could be extremely unusual. We could find there's lots of Earth-sized planets, but somehow they don't have life. They might have lots of planets that have life. This is the big question. It's what scientists are driving to get the answer for.
What about the life clock, Robert? All things considered, if one planet happened to be 20 million years older than the other planet, or a billion years older than the other planet, and they were of similar makeup, would you assume that the older planet would have life evolve a little quicker and would be more advanced?
Well, this is one of those mystery questions that's actually beginning to bug some astrobiologists and scientists who are interested in extraterrestrial life, because the percentages tell us, just on percentages, which isn't for speculation, that there should be other Earths out there with life, and the odds are extremely good that some of them are just a few million years older than our Earth and have a longer period of time to develop as an intelligent species. I mean, if the human race today, if we could fast forward a million years and we are still around, we will have advanced significantly. We know that. So the question then is, if such civilizations do exist, why have we not heard from them? And this is actually a significant question, because we actually have been searching now for about 40 years with SETI and other search attempts, where you just listen for radio signals from other places, and we have not gotten a signal. Now, that means we're only, so then the question comes up, why? And this is a major question. The answers are several. One, maybe this is the most egotistical one. Maybe the human race is the first. Seems unlikely, but it's possible. We don't know. Is it also possible maybe radio technology is very rarely used by advanced civilizations? And there's indications even the way human society now is developing technologically. We're shifting away from radio technology to internet technology to communicate. And internet technology is not beamed out over airwaves. It's through wires. It's phone lines. So in a sense, we're becoming, to other civilizations, we are becoming silent after about 40 years, 50, 60 years since the radio was invented. We would not be hearable to another civilization if all our communications is by internet capability? So that's another question. Maybe communication isn't by radio and TV and by broadcast, and so therefore you don't have anything to listen to. Could it be maybe other civilizations are blocking their signal so we don't hear it? I mean, that's getting to the science fiction speculation, and I could go on forever. The bottom line is we just don't know.
Let's go to Casey in Sacramento, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Casey. Thanks for calling.
Hey, George. Thanks for taking the call.
Hey, Casey.
And this story about the arsenic microbes may be a little bit hyped if you take in consideration that James Cameron and the boys from Titanic went down in their little submersible submarines and found life at the bottom of the ocean living in 600-degree temperatures. And the only thing that they were eating was the sulfur and the chemical compounds coming out of the fuel rolls at the bottom of the ocean.
Casey, that you have a point. There's no question this story was somewhat hyped. There's no doubt about that. Extremophiles live in a lot of extreme, to put it, as the word says, extremely strange places. The life they found at the bottom of the oceans, it doesn't depend on oxygen. In fact, oxygen is a poison to it. We have found life living in the hot lakes at Yellowstone that would destroy any other life you could imagine. So yes, there is life in all weird places. This particular discovery, though, is significantly different in one context, which is that one of the main components of life, phosphorus, there's only six, and one of them, and these are components of DNA, one of them was replaced by arsenic, and that's not been found before. It means the very nature of this life isn't just simply that it depends on different nutrients. It's that it's fundamentally different than all life on Earth. That says to us that it's possible to find fundamentally different kinds of life. The analogy that Linda gave about, I thought of the Horta immediately from that early Star Trek episode, silicon-based life, because once again, the nature of the silicon atom is very similar on the periodic table to oxygen. It has disadvantages, but because of the similarity, it's always been speculated by scientists for decades that silicon-based life might be possible. And this is a variation of that, and that's quite significant.
Did they cry wolf on this one, Robert?
Well, yes. I'm not sure if it was purposeful or by accident, and I'm not sure NASA was hurt or helped by this. If they wanted to get attention by being vague initially, they succeeded. I'm not sure that most people – I don't think actually the bottom line is that they were hurt much by it because – the discovery itself is significant. I think who was hurt the most by this, by the hype, was the journalist field that hyped it before the facts. This is why people should come to my website, since I don't do that. the fact is that...
I wanted to get you on 2 days ago, and you said, nope, not coming on.
Let's not talk about something in advance. Let's find out what it's about. I mean, if you'd had me come on, we would have said, is it Mars? And I would have been caught in the same game, and I'm not going to do it. It's my thinking is that in the journalist field, those that speculated, they're the ones that have been damaged by this. And in fact, if people, listeners out there, had been to websites that were doing that kind of speculation, I have to say those are the websites you should have second thoughts about depending on for good information, because they are doing things that a good journalist should not do. A journalist should focus on what they know, not what they don't know.
Next up, we go to Baltimore, Maryland, and Tony's on the wild card line. Tony, go ahead.
Oh, hi, gentlemen. How are you doing this evening?
Hey, Tony, you're as up late as I am, since I'm in Maryland also.
Let's see, here's my question for you. Now, the paper that came out with this information, now this seems to me like maybe a little bit above every day for a molecular or a microbiology periodical, although it's very, very, you know, important information. It just seems like it should have been relegated to the ranks of a paper and then given some, you know, talk over the airwaves about, like, you know, its merits, but to bring it up in the terms of NASA, I'm still like waiting for another shoe to drop. I don't know if it was because of what the journalist did.
Well, Tony, I can answer that question, I think. There's two parts to that. One, this NASA has a line item in its budget to research astrobiology, to do this exact kind of research, and they funded this particular research project. They were one of the funding sources for putting this research together. So obviously from the beginning, when the scientist came up with the results, it was NASA's decision to publicize it or not, because they paid for it. And NASA's very good at publicizing good discoveries that come out of its money, and this was a good discovery. So that's where the NASA connection comes from. They do fund research into the subject of strange biology to see that's information they want to have to give them some guidance for looking for alien life elsewhere. And so they did that's where the connection with NASA comes from. This was a significant paper, and the reason I can say that is that there are two major science journals, Science and Nature. And though they have their problems politically as well on some subjects, such as climate, when it comes to a subject like this, if a scientist gets their paper published there in those two journals, it's because the scientific community considers it a very important discovery. This could have been in a biology journal of any number, and it was not. It was published in Science. It tells you that it's a significant one.
And you know, Robert, like Tony was saying, I'm waiting sometimes for the other shoe to fall, too. I'm wondering if they're holding back. And they're giving us these little stories in stages. But
no, you say, oh, once again, think about, I always think, what's in the self-interest of the scientist who does this? And it's absolutely in their self-interest to, and NASA as well, it's in their self-interest to reveal as much as possible if they've gotten something.
You would
because
think,
it will benefit them enormously. To hold back doesn't do them any good, especially considering the budget situation for NASA, to reveal a discovery of real life someplace. Benefits them, they get funds. So, no, they're not holding anything back, I'm sure of that.
Let's see if we can get one more in, maybe two. Jim in Shreveport, Louisiana. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Yeah, hi, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, Jim.
Hey, Jim.
My little brain is thinking this. What if, you know, we are the only carbon-based life form in the universe, or possibly the last one, and that's why we're getting visited by UFOs so often? Because they want to see what we're up to, like a Jurassic Park scenario.
Well, you know, if other kinds of life are possible, such as silicon-based life, the way the elements function, the actual physics of the atomic structure, silicon might be able to mimic carbon, but it would have disadvantages. Carbon, by its nature, is so flexible. It produces so many different combinations molecular combinations that it's infinite. And so it always has an advantage. So I doubt seriously. I think that if we find alien life, and this is speculation, but I think it's a safe speculation, the odds are very high that carbon-based is going to be what it's going to be.
Robert,
it has the advantage.
Thank you, my friend, for being on the program. Robert Zimmerman, his blog, linked up at coasttocoastam.com right now. In a moment, Richard C. Hoagland joins us with his thoughts on today's announcement. We'll be back.